everyone, this is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as audio and video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955, and the PNWA, I should add today, also hosts one of the best, if not the best, writers' conferences in these United States. And that writers' conference is going to be this July. July 20th, I believe, is the day it begins. Now, if you are a writer and you live anywhere near Seattle or can get to Seattle and you've been thinking about going to this conference, I encourage you to sign up for it now. They have over 30 editors and agents representing every single fiction and nonfiction genre. You will meet other writers, both professional and beginning. You'll get to take classes, hobnob, and it is just an inspiring experience. I can speak for that myself. My current agent I got at the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference. But the cost of this conference will go up July 1st. So if you're on the fence, if you're deliberating, you can open a new tab in your browser right now, hop on over to pnwa.org and sign up. You will not regret it. All right. So here we are. Today begins something new for me here at Author to Author. All the guests I've had on have been authors that I have interviewed previously or met in my sort of travels in the publishing world. But today's guest, children's book author Trudy Strain Truitt, that's a bit of a tongue twister, comes to me fresh. I have never interviewed her before, never met her, and so you, listeners, will get to meet her with me. So let's get her on. Trudy, welcome to Author.
Oh, thank you, Bill. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. Let me introduce you a little bit for those who don't know. You are a quick history. Trudy published her first book in 2002. Now, you correct me if I get anything wrong on your details, but your first book in 2002 with Scholastic. And now, 10 years later, get ready, authors who think you're prolific. She is now the author of 80 books. Is this correct?
This is correct, yes.
74 of which are nonfiction and 6 of which are fiction, the Julep series, which is a sort of young readers, and the Secret series, which is more of an early reader or
that's
fourth
right.
grade,
bit,
third and fourth grade.
Right,
holy
right.
moly. Holy
well,
moly. All right, so that's a lot of books. That's at the rate of 8 a year published.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it is.
All right, so I'm going to ask you just straight out, how does one do that? When you think of your secret for writing, just being able to write 8 books a year, let alone publish,
you know,
how does that happen?
Time management is a good skill to have. I'm well organized. I get up early. I spend a long day writing. And part of it is just that I just enjoy it so much that every time my editor would give me one set of books to do, I would finish it and we'd just move on to the next set. And publishing in the nonfiction world is a little bit quicker than it is in the fiction realm, too, and getting quicker all the time.
Yeah.
So you have quicker deadlines to meet.
And so I assume a lot of these nonfiction projects were sort of assigned to you or were suggested to you, or
yeah,
did you come up with them yourself?
It goes both ways. Originally, when I first started with Scholastic, I actually got the contract with Scholastic because I wanted to write a weather book for kids, and I wrote it and I sent it to them, and they said, well, that's really nice, but it's not exactly what we're looking for. However, this is what we do, and this is how we publish.
Oh.
And if you're still interested, if you're in writing it in the way that we do it, they had taken the subjects and broken them down into various topics, like clouds and storm chasing and different titles. And,
right.
And I said, sure. So they actually gave me 4 books to write right off the top.
Holy moly.
And they gave me about 2 months to write each book. So it was really quick. And
wait, how many words were the books? Were they like 5,000 words? What were they?
They were about 6,500 word books.
Okay, so that's not it's not like trying to write a novel in 2 months.
No.
It's like a long term story, but still, you got to get it. It's still got to be done, and it's got to.
You got to do the research, and that's what I found. And I think being a journalist, helped me a great deal because I'm used to doing research. I'm used to getting deadlines done. I used to be a TV reporter before I wrote children's fiction. So I knew that, you know, what I needed to do to get the work done by the time that the editor needed it in. And so once you get, you know, once you can master that, getting organized, getting yourself together, getting your interviews done, then you just start to work at that pace. And it's interesting because I've turned down jobs where editors have asked me to work faster. Because
faster
I'm only
than you're working?
Yes, yes.
Good Lord, what taskmasters?
I still agree. But the way that the children's market is going, especially in library nonfiction, is, and with the economy the way that it is, editors want you to write quicker, and they want, instead of projecting 2 years out for their titles, they're now projecting a year out or even, in some cases, earlier.
Right.
So it definitely puts pressure on the writer to get the work done quickly. But there are certain things that I won't compromise on either. And if I just don't feel that, that I'm going to be happy with the result or that it's going to be reflective of the kind of quality work that I want to do, then I just will say no. And I've had to do that a few times.
You know, I've always felt with creative writers that really that if you like to do it, the only thing that can really get in your way is yourself. Not the market, I'm sorry, not the market, not editors or agents, but you and your own thinking and your own fear and negativity and so on. I think these obstruct more, keep more books from being written and published than any of the other factors involved in this business. And it seems to me that if you are writing at the pace you're writing, you must have, and perhaps this is how you live, but you must not, at least in the writing, let that must not get in your way, or you must not dwell long on what if, is this any good, and da 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 da, because you, I just can't imagine you could produce that quickly if you're sitting around wringing your hands all the time.
No, and it's especially in nonfiction, and it's actually taught me how to write fiction to be a better fiction writer, to push through those, because I definitely have much less confidence in writing fiction because it's all me, and as opposed to nonfiction where it's really the research that's driving the story, that's driving what you're writing. And so it's taught me to be a better fiction writer in that when I get stuck or if I'm having confidence issues, to just keep going. And that's really the secret, is to continue and to, you know, not let the dust gather on your computer keyboard, but to keep writing.
And when you say keep writing, so you reach a place, say, in a fiction manuscript, where, as you said, it's just all you, where you don't have the facts to sort of lean on that you're relaying to your readers. And so there you are at the computer, and you're writing your fiction work, and what happens? You don't know what you want to have happen next. You don't know how to express what you do know want to have happen. What happens when you get stuck? What is it that's going on with you?
Usually it's usually the character's not talking. And the character, for me, characters really drive where I'm going. And
sure.
I might have I usually like to outline a little bit on where I'm going. I know some writers outline a lot, some writers don't outline at all. I sort of, I do a little plot graph of where I want the story to go, but I don't like to, I don't like to force it in any direction. And usually when I'm stuck, it's because I am forcing something. I haven't thought things through. The character says, I don't want to go in that direction you're making me go. And so a lot of it is just starting to experiment and say, okay, well, how about this direction? Do you like that direction? Well, maybe not. Let's try this direction. And I can experiment in three or four different ways. And I think fear sometimes keeps us from just doing that, as if every word on the page is going to be gold. And certainly isn't, and so you just push through it until you find something that leads you in the right direction.
And you know, and it's so important, I think, for writers to understand the degree to which trust is in operation when we're writing. Because so what you just described there, you've got some character; they're not talking to you now. You know, you listen to the language we're using; they're not talking to us. Well, they're not there, right? But they are.
but they're not.
You're there, but there is something that I've always thought that writing is creative writing in particular. Is listening.
Absolutely.
That you're attuning yourself. But there's such trust necessary because you can't manufacture the character. The character has to flow naturally. And so you have to trust that this thing, which in a way you don't have the same control over, say, as you have over the knowledge of math and, you know, cooking, say, if there's some
right.
kind of factual knowledge you have.
Right.
You have to trust that it will come, but you have to be willing to wait maybe 5 minutes, maybe 5 hours. You don't, you know, it varies from day to day. But
exactly.
I think that, I mean, writing, so here, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
This is one I've asked every writer. I'm going to ask it in the middle of my interview now. I often do it at the end. But there's a little video on YouTube that I created where I compiled these answers. And the question I ask is this. Finish this sentence. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? How would you answer that?
If writing has taught me anything?
Yeah.
It's taught me to listen to my heart.
Yeah.
Because I think I am easily swayed by what other people think I should write. Feel I should write, say I should write, what the market, what I think the market wants, what my agent wants, what my editor wants, what
right.
my family wants, instead of what I want. And I think that's the question I'm always asking myself is, you know, what does my heart want? What does my heart want to say?
Yes, Trudy, I'd never met you, but as I listen to your voice, you strike me as a woman who did not spend a lot of time pissing people off. I don't want to call you a good girl, but you were. But you weren't. You weren't someone who was going to cause a lot of trouble. Is that accurate or not?
That's really accurate, Bill. That's very
right.
accurate. Yes.
And
yes.
so
no,
you're
was,
a nice
I was,
person.
I'd like to think that, but yeah,
that's what
good,
I sense off of you.
Yeah,
not,
pretty good student in school. And
yes, of course you worked very hard, didn't you?
Worked very hard in school.
Didn't yes. you?
Yes, I did. Oh,
and
absolutely.
You wanted to get really good grades. This is all my sister was. But the thing about mm-hmm. people like this is, mm-hmm. there comes you're so used to you don't want to piss people off that when there
right.
comes to that moment where, as you said, you've got to just do what you want. You
right.
have to risk displeasing others.
Yes, you do.
Right?
Yes, you do. Yes,
doesn't
absolutely.
This go against something you were taught maybe when you were six or something? A good girl doesn't do that. I don't know.
That's
is it,
right.
Am I in the ballpark here?
You are very so right. And what's amazing is that people who read, especially the Secrets of a Lab Rat series, which is about a boy who causes all kinds of trouble and gets into all the trouble that I could never get into when I was in school. I live vicariously through this child. And
right.
and people will read that book, and then they will meet me, and they will look at the book and me and the book and me and say, did this come from you? And I think that's one of the beautiful things about writing is that you can explore all the sides of yourself, the things that you did, the things that you didn't do, the things that you wish you could have done,
yeah.
and the things that you never did. And so that's the beauty of it.
Yes, and when you and the act of what of this of what we call listening to our heart, I think for me has been the experience of becoming acquainted with myself on the deepest level.
Mm.
And I don't care whether you're writing memoir or poetry or children's books. It doesn't matter, because that act of saying, what is it, and you can use different language. You can say, what does my heart want, or what does life want from me right now?
Mm-hmm.
What does God, whatever your words are. But there's a sense of, like, what is being asked of me right now? For me, the answer to that question has always been becoming acquainted with myself on a level that is sometimes difficult for me to achieve in the world where there's all these other people, you know, chattering away in my ear. That
right.
meditative quiet at the writing desk is so perfect for that for me. Because you were kind of shy as a girl, weren't you?
Yeah, I really was. It was hard for me to connect. It was hard for me to make friends. I was pretty quiet and pretty geeky looking, and I had really curly hair and glasses and my. You know, the clarinet.
You know, funny,
now
women, really curly hair. Do you know how many women would die for really curly hair? But then you have it, and it's like, oh, it's a problem.
It's a problem when you can't control it, and all
right.
the girls have straight hair. And they,
oh,
you know,
right, because it's the 70s or late early
yes,
80s, maybe.
Yes, and I had the big glasses.
Oh, yeah, God, okay.
I was dragging my clarinet, my saxophone. So, you know, popularity was not something that, it's always something I aspired to, but never
right.
never quite reached. And so, but I think then you find... What the great thing about that, though, is that you find how to cope in life, and you find friends that you fit with, and they're your saving grace.
Yes, because it's just like in publishing. I've always equated finding an agent to like finding a girlfriend or boyfriend. You want someone. You don't want, like, if you're going to get married, for instance. You're married, are you not?
I am married.
Yeah.
You don't want to marry anybody. You want to, you know, oh, thank God I'm married. I don't care. Just as long as their heart's beating, you know.
Right.
No, you
want to
marry someone you love.
Exactly.
And you don't want any agent, although sometimes it's, you know, at the beginning writers it can seem that way. No, you want that agent who loves your work.
Absolutely.
Who gets your work.
Who gets who you are. Who,
yeah.
Who respects you and who is a friend to you and who is an advocate for your work. Absolutely.
Now, the first books you published were nonfiction, and obviously that's sort of been your bread and butter. But at some point you started, which was your first fiction book that you published?
Julep O'Toole,
okay.
Confessions of a Middle Child, was the first book. And that actually happened pretty close to the same time that I got the Scholastic contract, within about a year. I had been trying on all levels to trying my hand at fiction, trying my hand at nonfiction, sending things out en masse to see how I could do. And I got the contract with Scholastic and thought, oh, this is great. maybe the fiction thing just isn't going to work out.
Right.
And within a year, one editor who had been rejecting my work for years and years and years, probably 6 years, came to me and finally said, I like this concept you have. And would you like to do a series on it? And I said, I would. And so we worked together on the series. So Julep was the first fiction series.
I see. Yeah. And so you had been writing fiction. You had been writing fiction prior to publishing the first nonfiction with Scholastic.
Oh, I had been writing terrible fiction before.
Well, now, why was it? Okay, if you could sit down the Trudy of those books now, what
mm-hmm.
would you say to her if she would listen to it that would be of use to her so that she isn't writing what you call a terrible book?
I would tell her to learn how stories are crafted before she started crafting one of her own. One of the things that I learned about along the way was that as much as there is your heart and soul in a book, there are also important elements of story and structure and theme that are important to get across, and you can miss big time on those if you don't. And that's where I think newer writers, novice writers, miss, is they might have the heart and the soul and the angle and the hook and all those things, but if the plot is slow or the character doesn't learn enough or maybe the heroine is just really unlikable,
right.
All of those elements that go into that big stew, I was usually, when I would write before, I would be missing one or two or more of those elements and
right.
just really crafting a good story.
Right. And now that you feel you understand how to bring all those elements of a full character with a full character arc, oh so important that the characters learn, or if they don't learn, that's the point too, that, oh, God, they didn't learn, you know. But,
right.
but now that you've brought all those things together, do you find yourself reading books and watching movies differently?
Yes, very
yeah.
much so. Yes, and that's when I would say that is really when I crossed over to understanding. Instead of just sitting down with a blank piece of paper and saying, I've written my heart, my stream of life, and
right.
here it is, and why won't anyone publish it? I stopped to look around and say, what am I doing wrong? There's a reason that editors are rejecting my work. And I started taking the constructive feedback, and I would ask editors, those who were willing to write to me, what's wrong? What am I doing wrong? And I paid attention to what they said, and I started to deconstruct. And this is a great thing for any writer to do, and I still do it. Deconstruct a great movie. Deconstruct a
right.
great book. What makes it great?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'll do that for sure. I know that when I was a younger writer and really, because I never took a class, never did, but I taught myself from every book I ever read, you know,
mm-hmm.
and especially when I was younger and really hungry and learning the craft element, which came relatively quickly for me, but I had to learn it. And what I was doing, I didn't know it, but every book I was reading, I was noticing, oh, how did Hemingway do that? Look what just happened there. Look how quickly that happened. Look
mm-hmm.
what he didn't have to say, or look what she didn't have to say, and I still felt, but I was doing it so unconsciously, you know, that it was going in, you know, because
right.
if you let them, writers, other writers will be your best teachers, because as a writer, they will show you what can work and what can't work. I mean, I can remember as a young man reading The Love Song of Jail for Prufrock by T.S. Eliot, this great, you know, modernist poem when I was 17, and it changed the way I wrote. because I didn't understand you could do what he did with language, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hugely influential in that way. And
right.
then, so as you said, as you described, you begin to see it and deconstruct it.
Right.
And do you find yourself being able to predict what's going to happen easier now than you did before in a story?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
I can see that, and I can find, you know, like when I look at a movie and say, I don't really care for that, I can tell you why. Where did it slow down?
Right.
Where did the characters miss a beat? Or when it turns, and often it's because I look at it and say, that's a forced move by the writer that is completely against the character's grain to
right.
do that. And that's often what people do. It's kind of a little bit of a cheat to do that sometimes. And that is, for me, that's the most difficult thing to do, is really staying true to what the character wants instead of what I have planned for the character.
That's right. Yeah. Strangely, what you have planned is slightly irrelevant. We have a caller. I'm going to see if he's got a question for me. I think I know who it is. Let's see. Is this Jeffrey?
Okay. Yes, it is, Bill. How are you?
I'm well, Jeffrey. How are you doing? Do you have a question for Trudy?
I do. Hi, Trudy. Wonderful show. We had times you could explain the process of cyclogenesis, but I guess for another time. But I really would love if you could elaborate on proper writing time management. I mean, with 80 books in print, you certainly have mastered this process, which for many writers is just so problematic, juggling our lives and our work.
Oh, good question. All right, so thank you, Jeffrey. I'm going to put you on hold.
You're welcome. Thank you, Bill.
So, all right. So what is your if someone was saying, I'm having trouble with proper time management, mm-hmm. what would be the one or two keys you could give them?
Yeah, I just had a discussion with a writer about this a few weeks ago, and my advice really is to just, and it's really simple, it's just to carve out a little bit of time in the day that's for yourself. And right now I'm working on a career curriculum series for kids, and I have to write faster probably than I've ever written before. I am writing 6 books in 9 months.
Oh.
And so I am at my computer pretty much.
How many hours a day can you write for and still be?
I can write for, well, about 12 hours before I start to see stars.
What? 12 hours?
If I have to, yeah.
Oh,
because it's
God.
Nonfiction's a little easier because you're doing research.
Right. Go ahead. Okay, so you can do 12 hours.
So, but it also encompasses, you know, stopping to maybe do some research or do an interview.
Right.
But, you know, if I'm working at it, I'm going to be working at it all day. But for those who are just struggling to get something down, I really say just give yourself a break and do 15 minutes a day.
Yeah.
And just sit down and write for that 15 minutes and then extend it and do a half hour in a couple of weeks. For that amount of time, just give yourself that half hour a day, whether it's right when you get up in the morning or before you go to bed at night or a half hour at lunchtime. Because right now I am struggling. I want to write some fiction, but because I'm working so hard on my nonfiction, I really haven't had time to do that. And it's been very frustrating to do that. So I've been taking my own advice and spending 20 minutes, 30 minutes a night just on my fiction. It's not much, but for the time being, it will do. I think the hardest part sometimes is just sitting ourselves down and starting,
yeah.
and pushing through the excuses. And
yes, I'd like to add something to that if I could about
sure.
excuses and sitting down. There's a great, I'm sure I've mentioned the show before, I'm going to do it again. There's a great writer, sort of life coach named Michael Neal, and he was the first one I heard talk about the difference between mood and desire.
Mm-hmm.
And your mood is necessarily ever-changing. It depends on what you're thinking, usually based on what you're thinking, any
right.
story you're telling about the world around you. And this will go up and down and up and down. And then there's your desire. Now, I am never in the mood to write, strangely, in the mood to write. But my desire to write is everlasting. And so
right.
when I sit down to write, which is always at the same time, I let my mind settle to the level of where the desire to write is, and once it does so, then I am, quote, in the mood. Then I feel it, and I'm writing. But let my mood determine when I'd write, I'd never write.
That's wonderful, and that's true, and I think that we do let our mood get in the way.
They're meaningless. I mean, I hate to say it, but in that way, they're kind of meaningless. They're just a thought that's going through your head at that time.
Right. And usually it's fear that keeps you. Oh,
yes.
I don't have a very good idea.
Right.
I can't think of anything to say. I'm going to stare at this computer for a while.
That voice. I can't.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get quiet and let it sink and not be impressed with your mood. When it comes to things that you know you want to do, you know, that you know that is there.
Right.
And I think that you are absolutely right. Setting out, it's good that there was great advice about the 15 minutes. My mother just finished her first novel at age 74, I think she is.
Oh,
her
that's
third
wonderful.
Novel. She finally wrote them, and she's been sending them out, and it's just great. I'm really proud of her. And she did it by only letting herself write for half an hour a day. She said, because she was very intimidated by the process at
right.
first, as many people are. But she said, I'm
sure.
only going to do it for 30 minutes. And then if she really wanted to, she'd let herself go longer. But I think by giving yourself a small amount of time, it's easier to the idea of just sitting down and writing for 30 minutes, well, I can do that, you know.
Right.
Fool yourself. It's okay.
Right. And I think
okay.
we get intimidated by the fact that, you know, you go to the bookstore, you see this completed book, it's beautifully bound with a lovely
right.
cover, and you think you have to go home and sit down and write that. And
right.
when you get 20 pages in or 30 pages in or even 100 pages in and you feel stuck and lost and there isn't a writer that – I don't know a writer that doesn't go through that period.
That
what I'm writing is terrible. No one will like it. It's, you have to get through all of the doubts and push past all of that and just keep going because by the time you get done with it, you've lost all perspective.
Of course
you don't
you
know.
And I'd like to add something that no one will like it theory. When you write a book, you are making a choice. And you're choosing one thing and not the other. Every word you choose, there are many words you didn't choose. And every time a character makes a choice, there's a lot of things the character could have done. And every time you make one of those choices, there are all the other things the book could have been. And there will always be people who wanted it to be that other thing.
Correct.
There will always be people who won't like there will always be someone who doesn't like a book, who doesn't like Harry Potter or Ulysses or...
Correct.
You know, 50 Shades of Grey or whatever it is.
Correct.
There will always be
yep.
someone who doesn't like it. And in your imagination as a writer, you can picture that person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And suddenly that person can become every person if your fear
yeah.
feeds it.
Right.
It's
and
always
that's one
going
of the
to
things...
be someone who doesn't like it. And it's always going to be someone who wishes it was something other than it was.
You know, and sadly they will post their reviews on Amazon
yes.
or other places. So so you will find that. And again, I think that for me personally, who doesn't want to offend anybody or hurt anybody's feelings,
right.
I think it's very upset. If, you know, the most challenging part is going, I have this book, it's on Amazon, and then you see that negative review.
Yes.
And
you don't remember the good ones, do you?
No.
My wife's book, Violet Bingham in the Grand House, got universally good reviews except in Library Journal. The reader said, everybody loves, the reviewer said, everybody loves it, but I don't get it, is what he or she said.
And
but that's
that
the only
the
one my wife remembers.
And that
you
is
know,
the one that
Washington Post, Seattle Times. Everybody else loves it. No, she remembered that.
It will awaken you in the middle of the night, and
yes.
you'll wonder, why? And I have learned now that I just don't read them, and I don't take much stock in them. I mean, I might read a good review. Oh, that's nice. But I don't, you know, I don't revel in it, or it doesn't sway me the way that it used to, because I don't need confirmation that what I've written is good or bad. It just is.
That's right. That's right. That is an excellent note on which to end, because we began on listening to your heart, and that's just what you have to do regardless of what the reviews are. Isn't that true?
That is very true. You have to write the story your heart says must be written.
Absolutely. Well, Trudy, it's been a pleasure having you on the show and finally getting to talk to you.
Oh, it's a delight for me. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Well, we'll have you on again, I hope.
Oh, I hope so.
Well, folks, thank you so much for listening in. What a great conversation. Remember, if you want to sign up for the conference, the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference in late July, go to pnwa.org. Be sure to check in with us next week. We're going to have another great children's book author, Kirby Larson. I've also written fiction and nonfiction, so it should be another great conversation. In the meantime, remember, what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. It's true. It really is. Until then, do what you love. You can't go wrong.